Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Books and Booze. Neil Pollack is back again. We're super excited to talk about his latest, Open Your Heart, which is another Matt Bolster novel. This is Renee, and I am very excited to be drinking Raging Bitch again. I think for the first, 20 episodes, I drank Raging Bitch, and then I took a long break, and I'm just enjoying the shit out of it right now. Neil, how are you doing after awesome Jeopardy wins?
I am doing terrific. Yeah, I talked to you as a two-time Jeopardy champion, and I just couldn't be happier. It's a lifelong dream fulfilled, and I don't even know what to say. It's such an amazing feeling.
So are you drinking anything in celebration tonight?
Well, I've been drinking all day, so I'm pretty flatlined. We had a party at a Mexican restaurant near my house, and I had two beers and two margaritas, and I can't drink anymore. I'm not a heavy drinker. I like drinking, but I don't drink a lot. So if I had one more, it would be very dangerous for my system, my finely tuned body.
If you need to run off and puke, just let us know. We can edit it out. I probably won't.
No, it's not. Not a puking thing. That's it's not that. It's just more sort of a low level headache and malaise. I'm so excited about this Jeopardy thing that I'm not really sleeping, and so I'm pretty fried, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
Did you also celebrate?
Woe is me.
What were you saying, Dakota?
I was wondering, did you also celebrate with shrimp tacos, though?
I did not have shrimp tacos tonight, no. I had some chips and queso and some guacamole. I don't know. I don't even remember. I don't remember anything that's happened to me in the last month. It's been pretty crazy.
You were just riding the wind. Which is
I am. I feel like I wake up in the morning and I just, and whatever the day offers me, I take, and it's been a very strange ride. I had an extremely unusual month, and I'm very grateful for all the good things that have befallen me. I don't know why, and I certainly don't deserve it, but it's been a good time.
So Dakota, are you drinking anything interesting tonight?
I'm also drinking Raging Bitch.
Look at you. From what I remember, that Dakota is a raging bitch, so I think it's perfect.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Jessica, what are you drinking?
I am drinking beer I saw on TV, which is super exciting.
Ooh.
It's Red Strawberry Ale. They had the apple ale, and then they came out with the strawberry.
So is this a Blue Moon or?
No, it's Red is the brand.
Oh, Red is the brand.
Yeah. It's
interesting.
It concerns me that every time I walk into a gas station, they just have coolers full of it, right there by the gum, they just want you to crack it open in your car.
You can't trust
good advertising.
You can't trust it. Wait, you really? Strawberry ale, really? Come on.
But there are some states where they're not allowed to sell beer in gas stations, and I think that's the idea behind it. They don't want to encourage drinking and driving.
I see. Okay.
It's you're just encouraging me not to get gas because I want to go buy beer. So I'm going to kick off with some questions about Open Your Heart, and then we'll roll right back around to Jeopardy because we're all, bursting at the seams with questions about this.
I know. It's much more interesting than books, isn't it, to be on. Once you're on the TV, everything else pales. But anyway,
Jeopardy, yes.
Yeah.
It's an American institution.
It is. I know. It's amazing. I want to talk about Open Your Heart, though, because it's not yet an American institution, but I would like to see Matt Bolster rise in the ranks a little bit.
Yeah. I guess I'll just update our listeners. For anybody who didn't hear the first one, first of all, shame on you, because our catalog is fully available and there are 24 hours in a day. But the Open Your Heart is a sequel to Downward Facing Death. Both of these were Kindle serials, but they're now both available in full.
Yes.
And Matt Bolster is a guy. He was on the LAPD. He was a detective. He found yoga. He left the wildlife behind and became a broke yoga instructor. And now he's kind of like the Jessica Fletcher of yoga. Death just follows him wherever he goes.
Well, yeah, I'm the Jessica Fletcher of yoga. Well, I guess to some extent, it's not that death follows him wherever he goes. It's just that death follows yoga wherever it goes, and he happens to be there.
I guess that's fair. I'm sure that Jessica Fletcher had her list of excuses why people died wherever she showed up, too.
Yeah, well, something had to happen every week, or else
good.
It would have just been called grocery shopping, she wrote, or something like that.
Would have been a less interesting show, I'll give you that.
Yes.
So my very first question, this is totally personal, it's just a question I need an answer to. You describe a yoga shirt with a Hulk on it that says Hulk Relax. Is that real, and if so, where do I get one?
It is not real. That was a fictional creation, although I think it would be very fun to make one of those. How hard could it be?
You should do merchandising, right?
No. You know what, man? I am not going to I want to write books. I don't want to merchandise books. You know, that's why you have a publisher. I'm not going to make Matt Bolster swag or it's not worth it.
If I make a Hulk Relax shirt, are you going to want a cut of the profits?
No. No, I would like a free shirt.
Okay, yeah. We'll arrange it.
That's all I ask.
So, I guess there's a couple really interesting things about this book for me. One is that we had a lot of the old characters come back, and including the cat, which you promised would come back, and I was pretty excited to see that he was still kicking around watching TV.
You guys were really into him, so I decided to throw you a bone.
So the basic plot line is that Matt's enjoying a little bit of notoriety after solving the murder from Downward Facing Death. I'm not even going to try and say his name because this beer is a high alcohol content. And he's doing pretty well for himself. But, you know, he's not rich and famous or anything like that. So he gets invited to go to a yoga retreat that is pretty fancy, and it's like the newest rising star in yoga. And, of course, that guy gets the shit murdered out of him because that's apparently what happens to people who get famous in yoga. And
you got to be careful.
You do. The real kicker here, though, is that Slim, who featured in Downward Facing Death and features in this one, ends up being held for it. So Matt has a real personal vested interest in this, more so than just in the previous one where he cares about yoga, so he cares about the case. In this one, well, the stakes are pretty high.
Yes. I mean, oh, really?
So one of the things I noticed is that many of the characters in Open Your Heart have a backstory where they're athletic people. They have, like, a pretty good life going for themselves. They have a really traumatic injury, and that is how they come into yoga. And I was wondering if that was biographical in any way or if that was just something that you had noticed.
It's not autobiographical because, you know, I came into yoga in a similar way as Bolster. I had sort of a, you know, psychological break. Not with reality, but just a moment of crisis, and I just started practicing, and it made my brain hurt less. But a lot of people I know do find yoga because they're like extreme athletes, or they have some, you know, they get some injury, and they end up doing yoga as part of their therapy, and it ends up transforming them into these hyper fit, hyper flexible, super strong creatures of yoga. And which doesn't mean they're any more or less genuine as like regular chunky monkey yoga practitioners like me, but it's just a kind. It's the kind of person who finds yoga a lot in America because, you know, now it's very mainstream. But there was a time where it was like it was kind of the it had a real tie with the fitness craze, and I guess it still does to a large extent. But yeah, so that it's just a common origin story, and so it's an easy origin story to put as part of characters' backstories, particularly when you're talking about the kind of yoga that heart yoga that I have in this book, which is very athletic.
Yes. You actually just led me to what was last on my list of questions about the book, but it's a great segue. The thing about this book is that Matt is out of his element. He's not in LA where he knows the local police force. But the police officer that sort of takes his side is a guy named Vijay, and he has a pretty strong distaste for the wealthy white suburbanite yoga people because he sort of feels like they're cashing in on his culture. One of my favorite lines of the whole book is when he says, or it says, hearing Anglos say namaste to each other was almost offensive to him. How would they like it if he went into a church and shouted, howdy, Jesus? So I have two questions about that. One, Vijay's not a religious guy. He doesn't have a lot of faith in yoga, and that actually ends up being a pretty big point in the story. I won't say why because I don't want to ruin it. But and the second question is related to this because he's not big into yoga, but he does feel like it's co-opting his culture. As a white guy teaching yoga, doing yoga, writing about yoga, and also being aware that there are people like Vijay who feel this way, like how do you balance that?
Well, first of all, to address the character, I think it's important to have a skeptical voice when you're talking about yoga because it is such an ideologically fraught topic in our culture. And I thought it would just make for good comic potential to have that character be Indian American. And I'm sure we've all known the Indian guy or woman who doesn't hate yoga or doesn't practice and doesn't care about it. So it's a pretty easy character for me to write. In terms of how I feel about co-opting Indian culture, I mean, yoga belongs to everyone. It's not meant to belong to people of one country or one religion or one ethnic background. I think the best thing I can do is honor its heritage and acknowledge it wherever I can, and also just adapt it for my own purposes. And anyone who's sane would, I think, agree with me. And to say that it only belongs to India or to Hinduism is a fundamentalist position that I don't think has any place in yoga practice. But you have to respect the tradition because if you don't respect and understand the tradition, if you don't respect and understand the tradition, it doesn't mean anything.
And that kind of leads me to something about Matt. Is that he's really serious about his yoga practice, and he's serious about the tradition as well. And one of the things that makes him good at what he does is he is quick to spot the bullshit with the people who are playing lip service and just trying to get money and get, asses and seats, for lack of a better word. But at the same time, when he gets in at the Heart Center and there's these parties going on and there's like hot chicks everywhere and all this
and drugs and lots of drugs.
And lots of drugs. Yeah, he does get kind of easily taken into it. He maintains a skepticism to a point, but even he's admitting, like, ooh, this is kind of awesome.
Well, it's tempting, right? And there's a lot of temptation in yoga culture. I've seen it. I've been to yoga festivals. I've been to yoga parties. I've seen those women with their flaming hula hoops writhing around. And, there's – I don't know. I mean, the drugs are kind of – I kind of took it over the top with the drugs, but there's plenty of documented instances of, like, crazy yoga drug parties. Because when you have all these beautiful people with their beautiful bodies feeling so open and so good, and so it's like it's going to lead to crazy stuff sometimes. And it's part of the culture to some extent. I mean, again, like the drugs are super exaggerated, but but the sex isn't, not really. I'm a boring married guy. I don't go to yoga orgies, but I've heard about them. in my mind.
But to be fair, any kind of yoga sex sounds pretty awesome.
Well, you know, it's fraught with problems that other kinds of sex is. So, this is a comedy. It's a satire of yoga culture, and inevitably, everything in it is exaggerated, you know, by a pretty substantial percentage.
Right. So one of our return characters is the not quite femme fatale Chelsea Shell.
Yes. Yeah, I love that character.
I love her too. And I'm gonna say, like, from the first book we know this, it's like she's Matt's weakness for sure. He can't seem to get himself under control when it comes to her. And he knows she's bad news, but he buys into this idea like, oh, she's bad news, but it's never actually really her. It's always just that she falls into these weird situations. So I want to say, was it hard to write someone like Chelsea Shell as Matt's romantic interest? And I use romantic loosely. While keeping his character's integrity intact, like going through those like back and forths that he's having about the way he feels about her.
I don't care about his character having integrity. I just want him to be interesting. You know, who needs a guy who's, you know, flawless? And he's got a weakness for this kind of person, and I think that makes his character better. And you know, I tried to. In this book, I definitely made an attempt to give her a little more depth, to write some scenes from her point of view, try to make her sort of less of an object and more of a subject, if that makes sense. Because obviously Bolster is the main character, and he's going to continue to be the main character of these books, but, you know, I have a rich tapestry of characters to draw from, and I think I like hopping around from point of view to point of view when I write. I think it's fun.
And then that leads me my other favorite quote from the book, and one that I related to perhaps more than I should admit, is when Matt is thinking about Chelsea, and the line is, was it possible to want to fuck someone because you found them deeply annoying? Apparently so.
You know, we've all been there.
We have.
You know, that's hardly an outrageous thing to you know, it's a very common human sentiment, both for men and women.
I'm going to say yes.
Yes.
I can think of a few people off the top of my head that made me feel that way. So.
Yeah, of course. We all can.
So the one big difference, I feel like, and you feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the big difference in this book versus Downward Facing Death is Downward Facing Death really dealt with yoga more on the surface. People who don't have a lot of experience with yoga, don't know a lot about yoga's history, they were going to learn a little bit, they were going to have some fun, but it wasn't going to be anything that really, like, shook them up. In this one, you deal with some things that are a little bit deeper in the, like, yoga tradition, history, whatever you want to call it, verging on supernatural.
Again, a lot of that stuff is, you know, is exaggerated for comic effect. Although, you know, it's based on stuff I've read about and researched.
So, did you kind of worry again with it being, you know, like you say, it's satire, it's exaggerated, you know, you're working it for the story. Did you kind of worry that it would offend people, or that people who weren't into yoga were going to be like, this is fucking too much, and walk away from the book?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's definitely like a sort of a magical realist element to parts of these Bolster books. And I find myself drawn to the sort of extreme ends of yoga philosophy and when it comes to my imagination. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely occasionally get people saying that it's just too much yoga for me. But, you know, that's not something I can really worry about. You know, these are things that I want to explore. And if the book goes off in a slightly X-Files-ish direction, you know, so be it. It's more fun for me to write. You know, I'm not looking to do like a a hyper-realistic police procedural. You know, these bolster books.
Right.
All my fiction goes off in really, really weird directions. It's just the kind of fiction writer I am. It's how my imagination works.
I think it's really interesting that you say that some people walk away with it because it's too much yoga. Because as I said the last time you were on the show, one of the things I really love about your writing is that you are able to get me to care about things I didn't think I cared about. You got me to care about parenthood when I was like, you know, I don't know how long, I can't even remember how long ago Alternative Dad came out, but long before I was a parent. You got me to care about basketball with Jubal, and you got me to care about yoga in both of these books. And it's kind of funny to me that somebody was just like, nah, too much yoga. Because to me, I was like, well, I'm really more interested in yoga now than I was before.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of material, but, you know, I try to present it in an entertaining way. I mean, these are not scholarly texts at all.
Right.
You know, these are, there's a lot, you know, there are chase scenes, there's a lot of car chase scenes, there's fist fighting, there's sex.
There's an explosion in this one.
There is an explosion in this one.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't lack for action. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, these are, you know, sort of cheeky yoga crime thrillers with a slightly supernatural bent. It's definitely its own genre.
So, I've got one yoga question left.
Yes.
I said we weren't going to talk that much about yoga, but I feel like that's all we've talked about so far. So I was
deeply, deeply. It's a deeply fascinating topic.
In the books, all of the yoga that we read about is taking place at like yoga studios and yoga retreats, and the people who are practicing are going to yoga studios and things like that. And, you know, I go and I pull up my gym's, like, schedule of classes every so often to see if there's anything I'm interested in. And they have a few different yoga courses that you can take.
Yeah.
Or classes. Do you feel like there is a significant difference between, like, the gym yoga and yoga studio yoga?
Well, you know, I have a certain amount of affection for gym yoga because I started doing yoga at my local 24-hour fitness in Austin. So I will say that there are really good teachers doing gym yoga, especially in markets where there are a lot of yoga teachers. And so you inevitably the talent pool is deeper. So you can get a good yoga class at a gym. On the other hand, the level of depth you're going to be able to get at a gym is probably not as high. I mean, you'll get a lot less sort of spiritual mumbo jumbo, but it's a little bit more of a risk. And also, gym yoga, you don't ever really know what you're going to get. A lot of times they're always changing the schedule. There's not a consistency of teachers. Teachers are always subbing in for one another, so. You know, it's inconsistent. Let's put it that way. It's really a crapshoot. You know, just because something says yoga doesn't mean it is, or, you know, it's like, I mean, it's not a religion, but it's like going to church. You just don't go to, like, any church and say, this is a church, or it's exactly the same as the other church, because there's so many different styles, and, you know, it's a broad range.
I will say I've been encouraged to take yoga from a lot of people, and actually the very first time that I ever communicated with you personally, I just messaged you on Facebook and asked you about yoga because I have chronic pain and I've had some hip injuries and stuff, and I haven't followed through on it. But one thing about gym yoga,
you gotta do your yoga.
Well, here's what I'm gonna say. One of the things about gym yoga that I think is attractive is that. Well, at least my gym offers a beginner's yoga class.
Yes.
So I feel like I can go in there and not worry about looking like a complete asshole. Whereas the little place down the street from me, I used to work next door, and you could see in the window, you could see all these beautiful, like, people.
Yeah.
Beautiful people doing beautiful things. And I'm like, there's no fucking way I'm sticking my badass into a pair of leggings and going into that room with those people.
Yeah, well,
not having any idea what I'm doing.
You know, A, those people are no better at yoga than you are, no matter what they can do with their bodies, and they're just as crazy as you are, if not crazier. So you can't be intimidated by them. That's just a show. But that said, I think you're right about beginner's yoga. A lot of, you know, a good yoga studio offers beginner's classes, you know? And you know, you should look for that. But that is true that, you know, gym yoga, you can get a, because it's offered free, you know, free to anyone who belongs to the gym membership, you can usually survive a class and not worry too much. But, you know, it's just in general, you shouldn't really worry about what you look like in a yoga class, because anyone who's paying attention to you and your, as opposed to their own practice, has their own set of problems.
Yeah.
Well, I will make a pledge today, right here now, that the next beginner's yoga class that's offered at my gym, I'll be there.
Good. Do the next three. How about this? Make a pledge to do the next three.
There you go.
Now, don't just do one. Just do it consistently and see what kind of, you know, if you practice consistently, you'll get good results. I pretty much guarantee it.
I will pledge to do the next three, and I will also, I'll pledge to update our listeners on any embarrassing moments that happen. Like if I fart or something, I'll tell our listeners.
Farting's always fun in yoga. And I would say, you know, so just, you know, do it and let me know how it goes, because I'm curious.
I will.
So I want everyone to do yoga, and I want everyone to be happy.
Well, you know, I think that the majority of people are going to be, like, totally stoked about the second part and a little bit ambivalent about the first part. But I'll do my part to give an honest, you know, opinion on how yoga affected me. And so I've committed to doing three, whether after three I go, fuck this shit, Neil's a nice guy, but no way. Or if after three I'm like, man, I'm ready for more. I'll let everyone
after three, I would say three with an option for five.
There you go.
Just do it. It'll be
you
fine.
Got it.
You'll have a good time. It'll be fine. Just focus on your breath and don't worry about things too much. It's not a big deal. It's just yoga. It's fine.
It's not a big deal, but you want everyone to do it. I love that. So
everyone.
We're going to switch gears and talk about Jeopardy, because holy shit,
yes.
Right?
Yes, holy shit is right.
We're on Jeopardy.
I know I was. It's crazy.
That's so exciting to me. I love Jeopardy ever since I was alive. Like, I grew up in my grandparents' house, and so we watched Jeopardy every day.
Yep.
And so I'm just avid about it. Now if we get the chance to watch it, it's really great because my boyfriend, he watches it with me, and we're really we're not really competitive, but we both are trying to answer him, and he's way faster than me, so I find myself I do get emotional about it. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
Answer's faster. I can't do it.
They heard me. We were in the pre-show meeting, and I was watching your episode, and I'm just shouting out answers at no one, but they had to hear it because we're having the meeting.
Yeah.
Right.
I was like, I don't
know. I know. It is a really iconic thing. You know, it means it has people have a very personal relationship with the show. There's something very, very emotional about watching people try to succeed on it. And you know, it was just a fulfillment of I don't know if about a lifelong dream, but certainly an intermittent dream for me. And I went on and I just seized the day and I won a couple of games,
so,
you know, maybe more. I cannot reveal.
I want to ask, first off, because this is something, because like I said, I can't be super quick when I'm coming up with the answer, but I think my secret strategy, if I got to be on the show, would be the clicker. Is it tricky? Because sometimes, like when you're watching the show, you see people and they're like clicking the shit out of that thing, but their light never comes on.
Yeah, it's hard. It's horrifyingly difficult to be able to time yourself, get in at the right time. Very difficult, you know, because you have to wait until Alex is done reading the question, and then there's a light that gets thrown. There are these secret lights that you don't see.
Secret lights?
Yes, and so you have to try to time it sort of between when Alex finishes saying the question and when the lights get thrown, and then if they have those video questions, it's a whole different dynamic, and then sometimes there's music, and it's just very challenging, you know. And then there's the, and if you buzz in too early, they'll lock you out for a quarter of a second. And then there's the fact that there's two other people who are going at it really hard too, right? So you're not, so you know, it's not like you're up there by yourself. You're locked in a death match with two people who are just as smart as you are, and just as committed to winning as you are.
Because that was the thing, is like when you watch, sometimes people, you can't see their clicker at all. They've got it like down, like poker.
They hide it.
They're not going to let you see it. But I was watching your episode and you had it up, and I could see you just jamming your thumb into that thing, and then the other guy's box would light up. And I was like, oh my God. For some reason, I mean, it's not like you're my best friend or anything, right? Like we've never even met in person. You've been on the show,
right?
And talked on Facebook. I was really invested in your success on the show because you've been talking about it on Facebook so long. And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, he's clicking the thing. Let him have it.
Well, at the end of the day,
yeah.
I got it. I won. So it's like it was a struggle. It was a monumental struggle, but I succeeded somehow. So, you know, who cares? Screw the clicker. Fuck the clicker.
That reflexes
where they get to smack the button. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
If you put a rage machine coming out.
Yeah, and so that was definitely an Achilles heel. And I think if I'd been better on the buzzer and better with the buzzer timing, I could have won possibly a little easier than I did. But you never know. I mean, the game is so strange, and it's so random, and it's so wild, and it can fluctuate and change so quickly. You never know what's going to happen, and that's one of the reasons why it's such an exciting game to watch.
You said something on Facebook yesterday that it was not a boring game, and it wasn't. I didn't get to pay full attention to tonight because, like I said, we were in the show meeting.
Tonight was also very thrilling.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is so intense, and I don't know if I just forgot that it could be that intense because I haven't seen it in a really long time, or if it was because I was literally taking notes so we could talk to you about it. But I was like, that is fucking insane. And then at the end, everybody got the final Jeopardy question right.
I know.
It was all about the bet. That's so cool.
It was so funny because Renee said, well, I watched the first episode that you were on, and I said, tell me the final Jeopardy question. Don't tell me the answer.
Right.
She goes to me, I was like, it's the sun. And I was so excited. And then she's like, everyone knew it. I was like, oh, well, never mind.
I didn't know it.
I know.
I'm going to be fully honest. I didn't know it.
I cannot believe it. It was so hard. I mean, winning that game, the hardest thing I've ever had to do, because those two people were super good. You know, both of them were just incredibly smart, and they both answered way more questions than I did. But I pulled it out because I bet big on when I got a daily double. I bet everything I had, and I got it right. And that propelled me to victory, you know. And then tonight's game, basically tonight's game, what happened was I got two daily doubles, bet everything I had on both of them, missed them both, and was down to nothing. And then they clawed my way back and managed to and I was the only one who got the final Jeopardy right. So these were not easy wins at all.
Oh, there you go. See, there's a windstorm
hard
in my house. In my town right now. Usually I chain smoke during these episodes, but I can't because I can't smoke in the house. So right before you called in, I went outside for a smoke, and I was watching it through the window, but I couldn't hear it because there's a windstorm and I was outside. And the look on your face made me think you got it wrong. So we were like, well, now we'll never know the answer. And it was Zamboni.
It was Zamboni, yeah.
There you go.
Right. I got it right. And
that makes a lot of sense then.
Yeah, so it was just, you know, that was a tough win. That was a tough win, even tougher than the first one. So, you know, it'd be nice if I could just get an easy one, because there are times when people win. I mean, they still have to work, but it's a lot easier than what I had to do. So basically, you know, I just So it was very intense and emotional for me because I really wanted it. And I'd like to think that that facet of my personality comes across on the show. You know, that's
I definitely
I'm not a
I appreciate that you went for the true daily doubles, though. That's I'd
yeah,
be
I
so
mean,
afraid.
You know, it's situational, right? Because if you're ahead, you don't, you know, if you're up by $10,000, don't bet at all because you don't want to blow your lead. But if you
right.
are, you know, but if you're behind and that's the only way you're going to be able to catch your opponents, then yeah, bet your money. You know, go for it.
So you are a strategy man, is what you're saying.
Well, you know, it's a matter of like, it's not even strategy. It's just a matter of like, you just look at the situation, right? I mean,
sure.
I didn't work to get on that show so that I could then go and be timid about my betting. You know, I went in, I'm on the show to play. And so if you're there to play, bet your money. I mean, the odds that you know something, the fact that I missed a couple tonight is, you know, annoying, but you know, you're on the show because you know stuff. So, and also because you have a pulse and you have a decent personality and they cast you for it, but mostly because you know stuff and you should have confidence in the fact that you know stuff. And who cares if you miss it? It's only Jeopardy. It's not like you're going to jail, you know?
I guess.
So, would you ever consider doing game shows as a new career path?
No. I loved being on Jeopardy. What a treat! But my God, I mean, it's brutal. It's a brutal, you know, sausage machine they put you through, and it's emotionally and physically very draining. And you know, I don't think being on a game show is a very, I don't know. Just to me, that's not how I want to spend my life. I mean, it's consumed my life for the last 2 months, and I'm looking forward to it being over so I can get back to doing what I do best, which is, you know, writing books.
Right.
Okay,
so
how about taking Alex Trebek's job then?
I think they're looking to replace Alex Trebek when he retires with someone who actually is a professional television host, not some, you know, vaguely amusing schmuck who happened to be on the show for a few days one September, you know?
Well, now that leads me to one of my questions, because you are an experienced announcer.
As
they covered on Jeopardy, right?
Yeah.
That burned you a little bit. Was that kind of
Alex is a comedian, you know. That's a good part of his job. You know, he's got a wry sense of humor. I mean, you don't host the country's most popular quiz show for 30 years without being funny. So it's, you know,
right.
try to match wits with the best. You know, it's hard.
So were you kind of just like, yeah, Alex Trebek just burned me. That's awesome. Knocked out the bucket list.
Yeah, man. I mean, I sat there and I talked, you know, tonight I talked with Alex Trebek about yoga on national television. So,
right.
Know, it happened. You know, what else? You know, I sat there and said, let's make it a true daily double, Alex. And I said it, and it actually – I wasn't just saying it on a sketch. I wasn't saying it, you know, as a joke. I was saying it because I actually needed to bet all my money on Jeopardy. And, you know,
right.
What a – I just walked right into the arena and did it. And, you know, to be able to say that you've done that is just – it's just such a privilege. It's such a treat.
And say, I mean – I said this in the pre-show, and I'll say it again for the listeners. It's an American institution. I don't know anybody who doesn't have some memory of Jeopardy, whether you watched it when you visited your grandparents or your family watched it every day, or, you know, my mom likes to tell a story that they used to watch it. She has four brothers, and the whole family would watch Jeopardy at 7 o'clock every night, and they would compete against each other. And as it turned out, nobody realized there was an earlier airing of the same show, and her older brother would write down all the answers and study it so he could
whip
everybody's ass at 7. You know, like, I don't know anybody who doesn't have something that they attach with Jeopardy, even if it was like, you know, when I had a sick day, I'd watch Jeopardy.
I will say that, you know, the actual experience of being on it and being put through the quiz show sausage machine is very different than just watching it at home and trying to outsmart your relatives, you know. When you're on, man, because being on it, being in the arena with the best players in the world is just, you know, it's something else.
I always wish I could do college Jeopardy, but I'm 30 now, so I feel like I missed the boat.
But don't you work at a college?
It's a little late. Yeah, maybe you could work at a college Jeopardy, although there are lots of people who, you know, work at college. Whatever. You could do it. Anyone, you know, it's not easy.
I kick ass at the college Jeopardy. Full of grown adult Jeopardy? Ooh, tough one.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. Although, you know, I got a David Hasselhoff category tonight. It's not always hard.
Oh.
I saw that. I knew some of those answers, too, which I didn't know whether to be proud or ashamed.
Look, you see a David Hasselhoff category, you go straight for that because those are questions that you're going to know. You know, if you see a French composer, you see a French composer's category, it's like, yeah, you might know some of those, but that's you're more likely to be able to get pick up a bunch of points on David Hasselhoff, and then you hope to poach one or two on the ones you don't know. So,
exactly.
You know, you go for the categories that where you think you've got an edge.
Everything's a lot.
I did notice tonight in the authors on authors category that you were like, authors on authors for 2000. Like, let's do this.
Yeah, I was like, come on. And then, of course, I got the Daily Double completely and missed it and blew all my money on a fucking Mark Twain question. I mean, come on.
Oh, wow.
But last night's Final Jeopardy was newspapers, and you've done your job as a journalist. So were you just like...
I was a newspaper reporter for the first 10 years of my career. So to get a newspapers category, just, yeah. If I'd missed it, I never would have heard the end of it. But I didn't, so instead it used to be a...
I do feel like your win yesterday was extremely restrained. You showed that you were like, yeah, I won. But it was really like, but it's no big deal.
No, I wouldn't say that. I danced around like a fool, dude.
You say that because you're watching yourself on TV, but me, I was like, fuck, because you won it all on the bet.
Yeah.
To me, that's like, you know, because you don't know what's going to happen. If you had bet $2,000 less, you wouldn't have won, right?
Yeah, but I would not have bet $2,000. Like, that final bet is hard, too, because, like, at the end of this intense game, then you have to do a complicated math problem. You know, it's a very challenging thing to do.
I don't know. I felt like I would have definitely danced around more than you danced around on that one. Probably also because I didn't know the answer to the question. I just was like, well, that's weird.
I don't know.
Daily Mail?
It was just,
I don't know.
Yeah. Other people guess the Daily Mail too. But it was so crazy. And, you know, as we talked, I taped it a month ago. I had to walk around for a month knowing that it happened to me, and I couldn't tell anybody.
You don't even want to tell your wife?
No, I told my wife and son, and my parents knew. My parents knew because they were in the audience. My sisters both knew, and then a couple of other people, but it was really pretty limited.
That's outrageous to me. Do they have, like, what did they threaten you with?
Nothing. They don't threaten you with anything. They just say it'll ruin the surprise. And it would. Imagine if I'd come back a month ago and said, hey, in a month I'm going to win two games of Jeopardy. Woo! Totally,
that's not exciting.
Not only does it ruin the surprise for me and my people, but it ruins the surprise for all the people who played before me and after. Because the whole thing is like, it's this constant string of tension. Like, who's going to win? Who's going to lose? Who's going to step up? Who's going to fall down? You know, how is it going to go? Because most people who go on the show lose, and lose badly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you, but it surprises me that they don't have, like a contract you have to sign, or they're like, you won't get any of your winnings, or, like,
Jeopardy. It's not American Idol.
I don't know. We had to sign something, but they told, you know, but we didn't read the fine print, because what are you going to do, get there and then not sign it and not appear? But
I don't want to be on Jeopardy after all.
No, we had to sign paperwork and all that, but there aren't a lot of secrets. I mean, if there are plenty of people who have written blog posts and even books about being on Jeopardy. So, I mean, there are no secrets in Jeopardy land, really.
So do they go over any of the questions beforehand, before the show starts?
Oh, God, no. Oh, God, no. That's against the law. There were these quiz shows.
Oh, right. I mean, they made movies
about it,
didn't they?
No, there's no way. What happens is they prepare, they have six games, and there's that the writers give to this independent accounting firm, and then those six games, they pick five of them at random, and you take five games in one day. So when you
that was one of my questions, actually.
Yeah, they take five in a day, and then your name is drawn at random as well. So there's no way to match. There's no way you can predict who you're going to get, what you're going to get, and how it's going to go. The only thing, you know, you don't know until like 5 minutes before you play that you're about to play. And then when you do play, if you see my two episodes, like they look like they were taped one day to the next, but in reality, they were taped about 15 minutes apart. Like I had 15 minutes to take a piss, change my shirt, and then head back out in the Thunderdome.
Oh, my gosh.
So here's my – that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane.
So when you see someone win a bunch of games – when you see someone win a bunch of games in a row, salute them, because it is a feat of amazing physical and mental endurance.
Right, because you're nervous. It's not like – I mean, it's not the same as, like, sitting down and taking a test at school.
No, man, you're on
national school.
There's a live studio audience. There's people making, you know, there's lights. There's people making you up. There's cameras. You're on a TV. No, it's unbelievable. Alex Trebek staring you in the face. That game board is floor to ceiling. You know, the set is cavernous. It's incredibly difficult. Incredibly difficult.
Well, I can imagine.
Yeah, it was stressful, but cool.
So
it was
super
cool.
How long does it actually take to film one episode? We get it in half an hour.
You know, 35, 45 minutes, depends. Sometimes they have to stop for a technical glitch. Occasionally they have to, they have to check scoring. They have to check a ruling. There's some things, sometimes they have to reshoot. Alex has to, like, reshoot something. If he flubs a line, he can, you know, they can dub it over. But they're, you know, it's a pretty well-oiled machine. They almost always get it done within 45 minutes, if not less.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I wondered, are you a little disappointed that Alex doesn't have his mustache now? Because I would feel cheated, I guess, if I got to meet Alex and didn't have a mustache. Or is that
you know what?
Me?
The stash went away a long time ago, so I think we all just have to let it go.
I can't do it.
I feel like
if I got on the show, I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry you don't have a mustache. And that would be my moment.
I swear to God.
Look at me funny.
Right? I haven't seen the show in probably since I graduated high school. Like, I may have seen an episode here and there. I couldn't tell you. So I turned it on yesterday, and there's, like, this futuristic set, and Alex doesn't have a mustache, and I was really unsettled. I'm going to be honest with you. It made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna have a moment of honesty where I tell you that a few years ago I worked at a bookstore, and I had to schedule my lunch breaks around because it was when Watson the computer was going to be on Jeopardy, and I was like, I have to see this. So I would, like, rearrange my lunch schedule with other people so I could make sure I got home in time so I could watch all of Jeopardy.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
Yeah. And, you know, it's what can you say? I mean, it's an iconic institution, and, you know, it's just such an integral part of American culture. In a good way. In a good way. It's one of the few things in our culture that celebrates intelligence.
And that's so exciting, because there's not very many things like, I have so much useless knowledge that's not helping me for anything.
I don't consider anything useless knowledge. I think knowledge, because, yeah, I mean, you have to do short facts, but you have to have a deeper base of knowledge in order to get those facts. So I learned a ton about Shakespeare and about classical music and about art and about history. And I learned so much just preparing for the show. It's just such a gift to be able to use my brain in that way again, you know, at age 43 to have the ability to study like I used to was such a treat.
Well, and the other thing I noticed, and you know, like I said, I haven't watched you in a long time, so I felt like I was learning about it all over again. Some of those questions, the way that they're phrased, is it's more almost more like a crossword puzzle question. But when you get a crossword puzzle, you have as long as you need to figure out what they're getting at. And on Jeopardy, it's right now, you have to get it.
It's a code. A lot of it's written in code, and there are keywords. You have to look for the keywords, and you have to be extremely sharp in every possible way, or you're not going to win. You have to be a live wire. So it's a very tough game.
It's pretty cool to me that a show like Jeopardy is still running because it celebrates intelligence.
Yeah, at least superficially, you know. But even beyond that, like, I feel like Alex respects people's intelligence, and you know, it's a lot of the people on that show are scientists and professors, and you know, it's one of the few moments where those people really get a chance to stand in the spotlight and compete.
And that's kind of
great, you know, and there, I just have such a profound respect for my fellow contestants and anyone who's been on the show and who's been through it, because it really is a unique opportunity to be selected.
And to win twice.
That's an even more unique opportunity, because most people who go on the show don't win bupkis.
Well, when I watched last night, you know, not knowing how it was going to turn out, I was like, I was thinking in my head, if he doesn't win, how am I going to phrase the "is it an honor just to be nominated" question?
No. Fortunately, we don't have to deal with that, because I am a Jeopardy champion and a novelist. And you know, it's been such an amazing couple of years for me, because I published, you know, these two yoga novels, and I published Jewball, and you know, I've had a lot of amazing journalism assignments, and I got to be on Jeopardy, and it's just really been a fantastic time for me. You know, I feel really lucky to have had.
You got to drive a brand new Charger recently too.
Yeah, well, because I review cars for a partial living, and so yeah, I got this like Dodge Charger Daytona with a Hemi engine. I think it's just a freaking monster.
So
absolute beast. Oh yeah, here I have the Monroney sheet for it now. Yeah, it's a Charger RT Road and Track Edition, 5.7 liter V8 Hemi engine. I mean, that should not be legal. Anyway.
I bet it doesn't get the same gas mileage that my very gas efficient car gets, or my very not gas efficient car gets.
The car I actually pay a payment on is a Prius, but it's fun to have a little growly toy in the driveway occasionally as well.
So you have a couple minutes, and I got two quick ones for you. One, favorite car you've gotten to drive for a review, and least favorite car you've gotten to drive for a review.
Oh man, that is a loaded question. Because you know, when you talk about favorite cars, you have to think about like, all right, yes, I've driven some amazing, like, you know, $100,000 Jaguars and super expensive Bentleys, but at the same time, I just drove like the new Mazda 3. Which doesn't sound like a very glamorous car. They sell it for like $600,000, and that thing was incredible. Obviously, it's not as good as a top-end Jaguar, but it was pretty awesome. So you kind of have to look at like, Is it the best car in its category? You know, you can't compare trucks and compact cars. So I'm hedging it. And as far as the worst car I've had to drive, I mean,
was it the Jeep?
No, I like the Acura. The Jeep Cherokee, you know, it wasn't great, but I would say, you know, Chevy Malibu or the Chrysler 200, those were pretty crummy. Oh, you know what the worst though was? The Buick Encore. That thing was awful.
Oh, it sounds horrible. It sounds like something my step grandmother would drive if she had
exactly.
lower standards.
Exactly. It's cheap little a cheap little people mover. It was ugly and it's just a terrible vehicle, but it sold pretty well. I mean, you can never underestimate the taste of Americans.
There's a lot of old people.
Well, that's who buys cars. Old people. Yeah, nobody under the age of 50 is buying cars. Nobody can afford them, and old people still drive. And so that's who they're making cars for. That's why this industry is so ridiculous, because I'm reviewing old people movers, and you know, the fun cars are just, you know, for like these outlier rich people. They're toys.
Yeah. Ryan, yeah, I haven't seen you review either of the cars I drive. Well, I've like one of them both. You know, my husband has one and I have one, but
what do you drive?
Traded my 2004 Jetta in for a 2013 Passat. Ford.
I've driven that Passat. I did write a review of it, but I drove that car, and you know what? I mean, it's pretty nice. Yeah, it's a pretty
But I was driving a 2004 Jetta before it, so I mean, I was going to like anything.
Exactly.
My car was old and whatever.
Yeah, 10 years makes a big difference in cars, because cars are much, much better now than they were 10 years ago overall. So, you know, you definitely had an upgrade there.
Well, the shit that comes stock in because the Passat isn't like the high-end Volkswagen anymore, you know, it's their middle grade or whatever. The shit that comes stock, like, blows my mind. I remember 5 years ago when we were driving cross-country to move to California, or me back to California.
Yeah.
We visited a friend, and she had Bluetooth in her Mini Cooper. And me and my husband, you know, he was just my boyfriend at the time, but we were like, this is the coolest fucking thing ever. And then
now everybody's got it. Now everything.
Yeah, and we're like the last people to have it in our car.
Cars can do anything, but, you know, 5 years from now, they're all going to be driving themselves. I mean, the age of people driving themselves places is coming to an end, thank God. What a pain.
Yeah.
So, one more question. We have a listener question from Jason Riddler, who is a former guest of the show and a friend of the show. He wants to know, and this is going to be another hard one, if you had to pick your favorite novel that you wrote, what would it be?
Oh, well, that's a tough question. I mean, I love the Bolster books, but the book I'm proudest of is Jubal, because Jubal, to me, I self-published it at the end of 2011, and then Amazon published it in 2012. And to me, that's an important book to me, because it showed – I don't know if it showed it to anyone else but me – that I could actually write a novel that didn't have me as the main character. It was a sign that I was ready to enter the world of becoming the kind of novelist I always wanted to be, a real fiction writer. And I feel like I succeeded to a large extent with that book, and I'm just I'm really proud of that. And I worked hard on it and used my imagination, and I think it's awesome. So I love that book, and I'm writing a sequel to it.
I think it's my favorite Neil Pollack book as well, for the record.
Yeah,
that I don't love the Bolster books.
Well, the Bolster books are what they are. They're their own thing, and I love them.
Sure.
But Jubal is to me just pound for pound, page to page, my best book.
Yeah.
There's so much in that book, and we talked about it on the last episode, so I don't want to like bore our listeners or anything, but I loved it. There's great action, both the like fight action and sports action.
I've noticed that as a reader, I'm not big into watching sports, but I love sports writing, and you do an amazing job in Jubal of sports writing.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Just like amazing characterization in there. There's a love story in it. There's this like epic battle between the Jews and like these crazy American Nazis, and there's history, and I mean, there's just so much to that short little book. It didn't take me, you know, months to slog through this epic tale. It was quick and it was sharp and it was a punch to the gut and it got the story told and it did an amazing job. So that's my second review.
It makes me almost want to cry to hear that because, you know, let's face it, guys, you know, my books are not bestsellers. I mean, they have their readers, but they kind of float in obscurity to some extent. And so, you know, they don't get reviewed anymore. And, you know, just to have – it just really makes me happy that people – I don't care if they like them necessarily, but it makes me happy that someone is reading them somehow, somewhere. And I'm grateful to hear that my goals with Jubal were successful, particularly because, like, I don't really – I like reading long books every now and then, but, you know, I like books that are short and sharp and smart and don't waste your time with a lot of fancy writing. I like a quick read. I think that a lot of times books are too long.
Well, I told you last time you were here that Jubal literally changed my life because it got me going back to the gym because that was my hour and a half that I could read because they have a daycare at the gym.
Right. Yeah, I remember that. Well, all right.
So now you're changing my life again because you're getting me to commit to try yoga.
Yes, ma'am. Well, you know, anything, you know, I'm just an inspirational figure.
You just are. On two-time Jeopardy winner and everything else. Here.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. You better believe it.
So we are, sadly, we're out of time.
What happened to Dakota? Where did he go? He wasn't even there. He wasn't even there today. Breaks my heart.
He might have actually dropped off the call. Are you there, Dakota?
No, yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
This show's very hard to do sober these days.
Hey, Dakota, great.
They're prepared
great job.
As well.
Great job this episode. You really nailed it, man.
I didn't ask any stupid questions, though, I hope.
That's true. I guess if you don't...
True.
You can't get burned if you don't ring it, so...
Thanks for coming back, and, like,
oh,
seriously...
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
It was the coolest thing ever. Neil's an incredibly busy dude. He's got so many irons in the fire that I'm surprised that you have hands left. You were one of the first authors I thought of when we started the show. I want to see if we can get Neil Pollack on. And we got you on, and you liked us enough to come back, to ask us to come back. So
I'm
honored.
I wouldn't say I would come back anytime, but I will certainly come back again when I have something new to talk about.
That's Jubal sequel.
Yeah, when the Jubal sequel hits the shelves, or if I get another project, you never know. I never know. You know, I can always get another project off the docket before then. Even, you know, I can start writing another serial. Come a calling. We'll figure something out.
Absolutely, and. Seriously, anytime you want to offer to come back, please do, because it's always really, it just blows my mind when we don't have to ask. When someone's like, yeah, I had a good time, I want to come back. I'm like, holy shit.
I had a good time, but you should ask. Hey, just call my secretary, you know.
We'll have our people contact your people.
Yeah. As Renee can tell you, I don't have a secretary. I just constantly monitoring my social media. I'm a kind of a rapid response sort of guy. I'm the opposite of Jonathan Franzen. I believe that, you know, should exist in the Matrix at all times. I don't love Facebook, but I love the people on it. So it's a mix. But I love Twitter, and I love using Twitter, and I have a blast on it. And, you know, when you sit at home all day, it's nice to have a place to go to.
Here's a plug for Neil's social media. Your Yelp reviews is done by famous literary people. It's
that was fun. That may be gone. You know, I don't know. It may come back in another form. My social media lately has been very Jeopardy-centric, to say the least. But anyway, guys, listen, I'm gonna go get my baby rest, and
all right,
and we will talk to you very soon.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks again. Have a good night, and we'll be back next week with Will Bajaro. Love Stories Are Too Violent for Me, his debut novel. So everyone have a great night. Thanks again, Neil, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
I hope so. Take it easy.